It's March 29th, 1461, in a valley in the north of England where a battle is about to begin. At the head of a 20,000-strong army is a young man. Tall and strong, his armor gleaming, Edward is only 18 years old and King of England. Today will decide Edward's future and the future of the kingdom. Victory will secure his grip on the throne, but defeat will mean execution as a traitor. Because Edward is not the only man who claims to be king. For years, two factions have squabbled over the crown. Edward's family, the House of York, and another powerful family, the House of Lancaster. Both families claim the throne, and both are willing to fight for it. Edward's father died for his family's claim, but Edward avenged him. He marched on London and took the crown. Now Edward has come north to seek battle with the House of Lancaster's supposed king, Henry VI. The two armies meet on the snowy, frozen field. Safely behind the lines, Edward watches as his archers take their positions, raise their bows, and let loose a barrage of arrows. Almost simultaneously, the Lancaster's archers answer in kind. Screams echo out, but not from Edward's side. The Lancaster arrows have thudded harmlessly into the ground in front of his army. It's the wind. It's holding up the Lancaster arrows while carrying York arrows deep into the ranks of the enemy. Taking heavy losses, the Lancasters have no choice but to abandon their position and fight hand to hand. A blizzard swirls, the ground churns with armored footsteps, and the white snow reddens with blood. But Edward isn't content staying behind the lines. He rides into the thick of the fight. The battle rages for hours until finally Edward hears a welcome sound. His men chanting, "York! York!" Outmatched, the Lancaster troops flee the field. Edward has won. But the Wars of the Roses, as these battles of supremacy are known, are far from over. The bloodshed will continue for decades. And in the midst of this violent civil war, a child will be born. A daughter, a sister, and a niece of kings. And on November 25th, 1487, she will be crowned queen. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is November 25th, the coronation of Elizabeth of York. It's 1477, 10 years before Elizabeth becomes queen at Windsor Castle. Elizabeth of York is 11 years old. In ceremonial robes, she kneels before her father, King Edward. Elizabeth is about to be inducted into the most noble order of the Garter, the highest order of chivalry in England. Its members watch as young Elizabeth takes an oath in front of the king. She then rises, now officially Lady of the Garter. And while Elizabeth may be a princess, her life has been far from easy. Since her father King Edward's great victory over the House of Lancaster in 1461, the family's hold on the throne has been challenged again and again. One rebellion in 1470 even forced Edward to flee overseas to Europe, abandoning his crown and his family. Elizabeth, her mother, and her siblings had to spend a year in hiding until Edward returned and won back his throne. But now, after years of war, peace has finally come to England. The new Lady of the Garter, Elizabeth, glances around the room. She sees her little brothers. The princes look so serious in their robes, Elizabeth almost laughs. They have been Knights of the Garter since they were infants, long before Elizabeth received the honor. But they are special, or rather, they are boys. Elizabeth may be the eldest child of the king, but she is not the heir. As a girl, she is outranked even by the youngest of her brothers. 6-year-old Prince Edward, named after his father, is next in line to the throne. And after him is 4-year-old Prince Richard, named after his uncle. Uncle Richard is at Windsor Castle too. He is the Duke of Gloucester. He smiles as he catches Elizabeth's eye. Loyal and true, he's been with his brother the king through triumph and disaster. But King Edward is no longer the handsome and energetic young man who won that battle in the snow in 1461. Even Elizabeth has heard the whispers at court. Her father has grown fat, self-indulgent, lazy. And in the years ahead, the king will rely on his brother Richard more and more. It will be the Duke of Gloucester who the king trusts to manage the distant and unruly north. It will be the Duke of Gloucester who leads the defense of England from Scottish invasion. And when the king dies in 1483, it will be the Duke of Gloucester who is tasked with protecting his brother's son and heir. It's early May 1483, and 17-year-old Elizabeth is on the run. Escorted by the few guards they can still trust, Elizabeth, her mother, and her two younger sisters hurry through the streets of London. It's been 3 weeks since her father died. Despite the king's poor health, his death at the age of just 40 was still a shock. Amid the mourning of the dead monarch, however, there is also fear. The king's successor is Elizabeth's little brother, a boy of 12 years old. He cannot rule England alone. And a weak king means a weak kingdom, vulnerable to invasion or civil war. Richard, the Duke of Gloucester, has already been made Lord Protector. With King Edward dead, his job is to protect the boy king and rule the kingdom till he comes of age. But that's not enough for Richard. Richard wants the throne for himself. So he seizes the boy king and his brother, the prince, next in line. Elizabeth knew Richard would likely come for her next. So she, her mother, and her younger sisters ran for their lives. Now they make their way in secret to the sanctuary of Westminster Abbey. The ancient church is a refuge. By law, Richard won't be able to touch them there. And so protected behind the high walls of Westminster Abbey, Elizabeth will be safe. But she will not be able to save her brothers. Both are under Richard's control. And while Elizabeth hides, Richard will tighten his grip on power and set off a chain of events that will ultimately lead to his downfall and Elizabeth's rise. It's fall 1483, 4 years before Elizabeth of York will be crowned Queen of England. Elizabeth is in hiding. For months, Westminster Abbey has been her home, a refuge for her family from her ruthless uncle. By law, no one can force the family to leave the abbey, not even Elizabeth's uncle Richard, the former Duke of Gloucester and the newly crowned king. Richard's lavish coronation was unlike anything London had witnessed in decades. All the nobility of the land came to pay homage to the new King Richard III. The rivalry between the House of York and the House of Lancaster appeared to be fading. Even Lady Margaret Beaufort, the powerful Lancastrian matriarch, attended the ceremony as an honored guest. But all was not as it seemed. Lady Margaret pretended to rejoice at King Richard's coronation, but secretly she had other plans in mind. She hopes to put a different king on the throne of England, a Lancastrian king, her exiled son, the 26-year-old Henry Tudor. At the heart of her plan is the young former princess hiding in Westminster Abbey, Elizabeth of York. There is one man who can visit Elizabeth in the abbey without suspicion, her doctor. He comes to see Elizabeth and her family from time to time, supposedly to check on her health. But his true purpose is to deliver secret communications from Lady Margaret. In a series of letters, Lady Margaret proposes to finance a rebellion to sweep Richard III from power. Lady Margaret knows her son's claim to the throne is weak. He is, after all, a Lancaster. Which is why Margaret wants her son to marry Elizabeth. Margaret believes a union between the houses of York and Lancaster will heal the kingdom's divisions and end the Wars of the Roses once and for all. Elizabeth has plenty of reasons to hate King Richard, and so does her mother, who is with her at the abbey. In the weeks and months since Richard's coronation, rumors have spread about the fate of Elizabeth's little brothers. Nobody has seen the deposed boy king or his 9-year-old sibling for weeks. The two boys have vanished, and they will never be seen again. Though what happened to them remains a mystery, Elizabeth and her mother have no doubt who is responsible for their disappearance. So they send the doctor out of their sanctuary in the abbey with a letter hidden in his robes. In it, they agree to Margaret's plan to depose King Richard. So Lady Margaret's exiled son, Henry Tudor, will make a vow to return to England and marry Elizabeth. It's late August 1485, 2 years into the reign of King Richard III. Elizabeth is at Sheriff Hutton, a castle 10 miles north of York. In her chambers there, she sits picking at needlework, waiting for news that will change her life. Elizabeth has done plenty of waiting in recent years. She and her family waited hiding in Westminster Abbey until her king, Richard III, finally promised he would not harm them. Then Elizabeth waited at Richard's court. There she became the subject of much speculation. Perhaps many believed she would be married off to some foreign prince, or perhaps a king would break church law and take his beautiful niece as his wife. Then this summer, like the rest of England, Elizabeth waited for an invasion. Henry Tudor, the last hope of the House of Lancaster, has raised an army abroad and is coming to England to take back the throne. King Richard's reign, which began with such ruthless confidence, is teetering. The king's only son and heir is dead from a sickness. So too is his wife, the queen. Support for Richard among the nobles is fading. Richard's only hope is an overwhelming military victory. He's been at Nottingham in the heart of the kingdom waiting, ready for battle. 2 weeks ago, Henry Tudor landed with his army in Wales. Having gathered troops in the traditional Lancaster strongholds in the west, he's now marching into England. King Richard is on his way to meet him in the field. His army outnumbers Tudor's by as much as 2-1, and Richard is an accomplished and experienced military leader. The outcome seems inevitable. And back in the castle, Elizabeth is waiting, while thousands of men fight in a field for England's future. Suddenly, there's a flurry of shouts from the castle courtyard. Elizabeth gets up, dropping her needlework. She rushes through the halls, past room after room, down the stairs, and out into the courtyard to hear the news the messenger has brought. The waiting is over. Richard III has lost. Henry Tudor will soon arrive in London victorious. Before long, Elizabeth will be queen. It's November 25th, 1487. Deep within the Palace of Westminster in London, Elizabeth of York is ready for her coronation. The Wars of the Roses are over. Richard III is dead, killed at the Battle of Bosworth Field. Now Henry Tudor rules England as Henry VII. And true to the vow he made, he married Elizabeth in January 1486. The old enemies, the House of York and the House of Lancaster, have been joined together. Now it falls to Henry and Elizabeth to heal the country. Theirs is a political marriage, but one that will blossom into love, a stable union that will bring peace to England after so many decades of war. Elizabeth's ladies drape her in fine woven cloth, in velvets and silks. Her hair is loose and shimmers at her back. It's auburn, a color which will be inherited by her children and grandchildren, future kings and queens of England. Her ladies gather the hair, brushing it to perfection. There is just one thing left, a crown of gold set with pearls and jewels. Elizabeth feels the cold weight of the metal as it is placed upon her head. She feels it all the way down through her body. One of the ladies brings a mirror. Elizabeth stares at herself, at her robes and furs and jewels. She is just 21 years old, and today Elizabeth of York will become queen. Together with Henry, Elizabeth will build a new dynasty, a Tudor dynasty, one that will rule England for more than a century. Next on History Daily, November 26th, 1789, President George Washington hopes to unite his bickering new country with a national holiday, Thanksgiving. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily. Hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by William Simpson. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship, Pascal Hughes for Noiser.